A Radiance in the Gulag by Nyola Sedunate. Part 2. Ordeal. Chapter 4. The Crime. During my 20s, I worked at the most menial tasks, holding clerical and factory jobs, so that I could go to church and pray without trepidation. In 1970, however, I took work in the computer center of the University of Vilnius Physics and Mathematics Department, under the title of Senior Engineer, with the duties of a key punch operator, earning about 100 rubles a month. But I had to leave that position because the university rector called me in and told me that if I did not resign, it would go badly for him. I did not want him to suffer, so I drafted my resignation, and they terminated me at my request. Here is what happened. In 1970, when a criminal case was brought against Father Anatas Siskevicus for catechizing children, I hired an attorney for him. But to sympathize with and help those who are being persecuted by the KGB is to make oneself a target of the KGB. Father Siskevicus' trial took place in Moletai on September 7th and 8th, 1970. When we entered the courtroom the first day of the trial, we saw that all the seats were already taken by KGB agents, militiamen in mufti, and several women wearing heavy makeup. Witnesses, friends, and acquaintances of the priest, only a small number of whom gained access to the courtroom, had to stand throughout the trial. The trial lasted from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. Among the witnesses were some elderly mothers of large families, exhausted by communal farm work, including one mother of four recuperating from abdominal surgery and also one war veteran missing a leg. When I suggested to the young men who were seated that they should allow the tired mothers and invalids to have a seat, they angrily retorted, "If they're tired, let them out. Nobody's keeping them here." The poor men did not understand that all these people had been brought here and were being kept here by love and respect for the priest. Bored, they paged through newspapers and talked among themselves, paying no attention to the trial, while cynically ridiculing the faithful who were saddened and concerned about the priest's fate. Summoned to the trial as witnesses were about 17 children, ages 7 to 10, and their parents. Even before the trial, the children were threatened by the principal of the Dubingiai Primary School and several Czechists. Czechist is another name for a KGB agent. From Cheka, the former name of the KGB. Pushing and even striking the children, they pressured them to sign edited statements alleging that in the church hall the priest taught children religion. Of the 17, only four signed, but even these four stated during the trial that they had signed under duress, not even knowing the contents of the statement. All the witnesses, including the children, were isolated from one another until their appearance on the stand. The officials intimidated and threatened the children and the parents in all sorts of ways, demanding that they testify that the priest had taught the children religion. However, the parents all testified that they themselves, or close relatives, had taught the children religion, and the priest had only tested their knowledge. Therefore, they asked that they, the parents, be sent to prison, and not the priest. However, no one paid attention to them. Summoning the child witnesses one by one, the judge told them, "It is good that you studied religion. It is necessary to study. I studied myself. After all, the priest taught you, didn't he?" The children were very frightened, and many of them wept, but all of them replied that it was not the priest who taught them, but rather their father or mother or grandmother. After the trial, the four children became seriously ill, feverish, weeping, and restless, and they shouted that they were afraid of the militiamen. After the first day of the trial, Father Siskevicus offered the holy sacrifice of the Mass in the evening, with weeping parishioners participating. During the sermon, he asked all the faithful to respond to hatred and injustice with love and prayer, according to the example of the crucified Jesus Christ. Kneeling at the foot of the cross, the children thanked God for helping them not to be afraid of the official's threats and to tell the entire truth in court. The second day of the trial, even fewer people were allowed into the courtroom, and only officials were given seats. They abrogated the priest's right to present witnesses. Hardly had the court recessed, when two militiamen burst in and, without explanation, escorted the only witnesses present out of the courtroom. Immediately afterward, the assistant chief of the Moldatai militia, Tamos Yonas, entered the room. Czechist agents, standing at the door, pointed at me and said, "Grab her." Tamos Yonas seized me by the hand, which I disengaged, but two militiamen sprang forward, twisted my arms behind my back, and took me from the courtroom. They seated two of us in an automobile, and Tamos Yonas drove us to a militia station. The militiamen joked that it had been planned ahead of time to escort two of us roughly from the courtroom, in order to frighten all the others. The other woman detained was the mother of four children. She had recently undergone abdominal surgery, and her third daughter, little Therese, after being frightened the day before in court, was very ill. I explained all of this to the chief of militia and asked him to release her, since he knew what sort of offenders we were. He mocked me, but half an hour later he put the woman on a bus to her collective farm, ordering the driver not to let her off along the way, lest she return to the trial. The woman was very pale, and weeping from fright. After the trial was over, and the priest had been taken off to the Luskiskiai prison in Vilnius, Tamos Yonas returned to the militia headquarters and bragged to me, "We sentenced the priest!" He had received 1 year of hard labor, and Tamos Yonas explained that he had detained me because they wanted peace and quiet in the courtroom. Yet in the courtroom, no one had caused a disturbance, and the judge had not warned me even once. When Tamos Yonas began to make fun of the faith, I told him that you cannot make fun of something with which you are not familiar. Tamos Yonas replied, "You are well read on the subject of religion, but Raguskas was smarter than you. Have you read what he has written?" "Yes, I have read his books, but before death he regretted that he had written so, and called for a priest. But two Czechists guarded the entrance to his ward and would not allow any visitors in. The hospital personnel heard how he prayed out loud, reciting the Miserere and other penitential psalms." Tamos Yonas was surprised, and after a moment of thought he said, "Raguskas prayed before dying because he had become senile." Surprised, I asked, "Just a few months before Raguskas' death, an article was printed in the Republic newspaper under his byline. They do not print articles by senile writers, do they?" "Raguskas was only 60. He was suffering from abdominal cancer and could not have become senile in 2 months after writing the article." Tamos Yonas did not answer, but changed the subject. Thus, he was the first of the government atheists to bear witness publicly, in the presence of all those militiamen, that the ex-priest Jonas Raguskas had prayed before his death. May the Lord have mercy on his soul. After that, Tamos Yonas returned my purse and internal passport, which he had taken when he was escorting me from the courtroom, first making a notation from the passport for the Vilnius KGB. I was already preparing to leave, when suddenly the door opened and the chief of the Moletai KGB, intoxicated, stumbled into the room. Seeing me, he lurched nearer and, banging his fist on the table, shouted, "Why have you come here? What do you want here? Why are you defending him? What is he to you? Do you know that he has blood on his hands?" His anger was so great that as he shouted, his spittle flew in all directions. The militiaman, who had been in the room, slunk off to the side. I calmly explained to him that my late mother and father, Siskevius, had been students together at the Birazi High School, so she knew him well and always respected him. And I also respected all priests. He went on shouting that he knew everything about me and that he had recordings of my conversations with the priest and so on. "I am not in the least bit interested in what you have," I replied. After a while, when I continued answering him calmly, the KGB chief quieted down. But it was midnight before they released me from the militia station. For the first time, I felt how unfortunate are those who do not have faith or love. I saw how the suffering of Father Siskevius, his imprisonment, accepted with love, touched their hearts and consciences. Would that more people could be found determined to go to Golgotha with Christ and to die with him.